Hey, folks, wanted to give a quick note before today's episode. First of all, surprise, it's an episode after what we said was the very last episode we'd ever do on a weird day that's not a Monday or a Wednesday like we used to do old school, but a Saturday. And I think if you check your calendars, you know why that is. And second of all, I wanted to say that we recorded this episode last Thursday, the day before we recorded our Bunhead Bros episode 18 / our Final Four Words episode last Friday. So what we have here is a Abbey Road Let It Be situation where the Beatles recorded Abbey Road last, but they released Let It Be last. But then when people look back on it, you think of like, oh yeah, Abbey Road's like their last album, even though in the chronological release at the time. What I'm saying is, we're the Beatles. Demi and I are John Lennon and Paul McCartney. I'm definitely Paul. He's definitely John, because John's way cooler than Paul. But I write songs about being 64. Regardless, the point is, for us, because of the timing of finally doing this interview and how close it came to a certain date, which is today, we couldn't help ourselves but put it out this way. So consider this the bonus track to the Gilmore Guys / Bunhead Bros podcast. We can just call it the Gilmore Guys podcast. Consider this the bonus track. Something that I don't think any of us, especially myself, would have anticipated happening by the end of the show. So consider this a parting gift from us to you. Thank you for allowing us into your homes and into your lives and into your ears for the last 2.5 years. 237 episodes of the show now. It's been one of the great joys of my life and an honor to host this for you guys with Demi. So here it is, our interview with Lauren Graham.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is, I'm going to say it, gang, it's a product I actually use. I've been using it for 10 years now. I've made every single website I've made in the last decade using Squarespace, because Squarespace actually has everything I need. If you want to start a completely personalized website with a new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint is your answer. Choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business, and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. You can do so much with Squarespace, like email campaigns for outreach. You can have analytics to find out who's visiting your website and why. You can have eShop e-commerce functionality. I used that when I was doing my little bake shop on there for a while. I stopped doing it, but man, the website I had for a little bit looked really good because I used Squarespace. And there's so much I didn't know about setting up my shop that they were able to answer for me over the chat and their award-winning 24/7 customer support. So right now, go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/Gilmore Guys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/Gilmore Guys.
It's finally happening.
Holy moly. This is, let's all just take a
break. Yeah.
Take a beat.
Okay.
It. A moment of silence.
All right, let's do it.
What if we just did the whole thing silently?
A silent movie just, podcast?
It's a visual podcast.
I'm into it. Guys, it's high concept, but it's going to work. And it is just la-la's the whole time. So we'll just talk for a few minutes at the top. Then we'll introduce you.
I love it.
And we'll talk. Yay.
Yay.
Cool. All right, here we go. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Oh, I was flat. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Okay, I'm back in the game. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Ba-ba-ba. Folks, welcome to Gilmore Guys. We're back to Gilmore Guys after 19 plus episodes. Got a Gilmore Gap for ya. I'm Kevin.
I'm Demi.
And we're
the Gilmore Guys.
For one last time.
It's been a while since we've said that.
been a while since we've said that.
But it feels...
It's been literally 3 or 4 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But it feels natural, and it feels like it was necessary for something so special as this.
It feels like two or three years or 20 years from now, we're going to wake up in a cold sweat. Welcome to Gilmore Guys!
Yeah.
And that'll be the case.
Still signing all my checks as Gilmore Guys.
There's some muscle reflexes at work here. But guys, we fooled you.
We fooled you.
This was a gotcha. A gotcha getcha. We ended the podcast last week.
That's right.
Except J.K. Rowling, we didn't end the podcast last week.
That's right, because we wanted to do something special for June 3rd. The famous date that you all
folks,
know and love.
It's June 3rd today.
It is. Happy June 3rd to
us all. June 3rd to us all. And to commemorate it, we got, you know, this is our Frost Nixon. Can I build this up anymore?
I think you can. We are interviewing Richard Nixon. What if,
or this is our Richard Simmons, whatever that guy's name was.
Yeah, except we
except
are not,
not creepy
to.
Or weird yes. and not that. So I think without further ado, it's time to introduce our special guest.
I want you to meet my special guest.
Oh, yeah.
La, la.
One more time?
La, la.
Come on, special guest. Well, you may know her from her sitcom, Townies.
Yeah.
Or as the guest host of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Uh-huh.
You may also know her as the best-selling author of Someday, Someday, Maybe, Talking As Fast As I Can.
That's right.
And the woman behind Sarah Braverman and the iconic Lorelai, Victoria Gilmore. She is the original Instagram. She is your golden gram. She is the gram cracker of jokes, that is. Ladies and gentlemen, give it the hell up for Lauren Graham.
Wow. It's literally... Woo. Best introduction I've ever had of anything.
That's an honor.
Oh my.
And well deserved.
And Townie's shout out. Who doesn't need that?
That's the next show we're covering.
Yeah.
The Townie.
Real quick, guys, it was only like 13 episodes. Oh. You'd get,
yeah.
You'd that's be a, done
it's
real
It's a limited
fast.
Series. That's how we
wow,
do now.
Wow, yeah.
Lauren.
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining
guys,
us.
Guys, I can't believe it took this long.
Wow.
I'm both thankful, sorry, confused.
You good. It's all good, man.
You know, it's been in the back of my mind for so long, and just I don't want you to think I ever for a minute forgot about you or wasn't going to get here.
Well, how could you with everyone tweeting at both of us so constantly?
Harassing you at book signings and events in front of Linda Holmes. But we're here now.
Yeah.
And it's all good. Yeah, yeah. I don't think anyone ever assumed it wouldn't happen.
No,
right.
No,
point.
No.
Just
yeah.
things
no.
take time.
But you know,
yes, ma'am,
that I wasn't asked to be here. That
now, is... see, here's a point of contention we need to go
okay,
over
let's
before
clear it up.
We. This is our clearing the air. This is like when Louis C.K. goes on Marin. He's like, "What the hell, man?" This is so. The invitation was implicit.
Right.
Because what happens, Demi and I don't ever feel like we belong at the events that we see.
Welcome
you
at. To my entire life. What are you talking about? I don't belong there.
In the sense of like a premiere party for
right.
your new show or a press junket for your show or these
right.
events, you don't want to be the weirdo that's like, by the way, will you do my podcast?
Right.
Like, you don't want
But
to
then
be
how
that
do you
guy.
Get anybody on your podcast?
You
know the first person to ask me to be on your podcast? Sarah Ramos from Parenthood.
Well, that was our way because we did think like, we're not going to cold call on Twitter because
right.
how many millions of those must you get a day? We can't just, you know, go through this. So it was a long walk. It was a long road. Thank
yeah.
you. It was like a, what am I, it was a crock pot. We've just been heating it up for
right.
the last
That's right.
two and a half years.
Wow.
The 237th episode of this podcast
Which
is your
is,
episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. It's almost as many episodes as you did of Parenthood and Gilmore combined,
Put
I believe.
Together? I don't
Put
know
together.
What those numbers are, but we had a 100 episode cake on both of them.
Okay.
Which is what they do. I wrote about this in my book, but on Gilmore Girls, and we got to 100 episodes, and they were like, guys, we've got a break right now, and everybody come down for the cake?
Sure.
And I was like, what? We just did 100 episodes of this show. Don't we get like a nylon backpack? Like a nothing? And
nope.
like, and it's, it, I found out later, it's a time-honored tradition. I don't know why.
I thought it was going to be like a weird union rule. Like,
oh,
I think it's for
SAG
syndication.
Required. Is it really?
Yeah, because it's 100 episodes is where they can easily syndicate something on a Disney
I don't
network.
Mean that. I mean,
oh.
why cake?
Oh,
like,
I have no idea.
Why the instead, breaking in the middle of the day
Is there
for
a
cake?
Food you'd prefer instead of cake?
I didn't understand... food even. I just didn't know because I'd never done it before. And then when we got there for Parenthood, I was like, yeah, guys, we're probably going to have the 100 episode cake because I've done this before. So I don't know. It's just what
they
do.
Were you that confident?
They
were like, she's a parent.
No, like, God, no. No, no, no. I mean, when we got to the 100 episode cake, gotcha. I could tell the children on the show that what we were going to experience today was a cake.
It's going to be from Ralph's.
Because they'd never been there before. Our Parenthood cake was quite elaborate. Not that it couldn't have been from Ralph's, but no, I was never confident about anything lasting, especially when I like it.
Sure. Does that continue now? Like that feeling of, oh, this is not going to happen?
Well, it's always there, you know. I mean, I just did a pilot that didn't get picked up. That I understand why, and I think it was best. You know, it was like worth trying this kind of ambitious idea. And
this is Linda from HR.
This is Linda from HR, which has the best title of any show ever.
I really like the script.
I like the script too, very much. And
can I break this on this episode?
Break what?
You read with one of our buddies.
Who?
Mr. Ross Kimball.
For
Linda for HR.
But I mean, for which character?
Oh, for the husband character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's a swell fella. He's been on this show couple of times. He's a big fan of Gilmore Girls.
Oh, my God.
And he said, dude, I'm so nervous. You can't tell anybody.
Oh.
I'm reading with Lauren tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
I'm doing it. And he said, it was so great. You were wonderful. It was a lovely experience.
Boy, do I feel for, you know, I was a producer on the show and got to, you know, watch tapes and sit in with people. I don't know if I tried to be there as much as possible because I thought it would be helpful. I think in some cases, I don't know, maybe that puts more pressure on it, but I just thought if it were me, I would want to read with the person I'm going to read with and not like some, you know, casting or person who's not that. But gosh, it just was so eye-opening and helpful and so many great people out there coming in and reading, being incredible.
You've been doing pilot season stuff for a while now. How do you feel like it's changed since when you started?
The main way it's changed is you don't meet as many people in person. That's one of the reasons I wanted to be there.
There's more tape.
So much tape. And people taping in their houses. You know, the kid who ended up playing my son, his first tape was like sheet hanging from the, you know, door and like, you know, kind of an older voice playing, you know, whoever, playing children's parts. And, you know, he was really great. But I miss that, you know, and I think it's how I got some of my first jobs. Was I wasn't necessarily fantastic, but I kind of like would chit chat and, you know, get kind of a little connection going and so they'd let me do it again or give me some direction. And I think that chance to settle down a little bit and get to audition feeling more comfortable, maybe you have that same thing in your house, but sending a tape, but I just like to know somebody, see somebody,
it's and a first
feel
date.
If we feel if we have any chemistry, especially for the husbands or whatever.
Yeah, it's the difference between a long distance relationship.
Yes,
and having a date at little Dom's.
Yes,
shouts
out to them. Yeah,
they're sponsored by Ralph's now. Was that what it was like when you like went to meet for Gilmore? Was it a lot of trying to figure out the like rhythm of?
Well, that was Alexis had been cast. I was on another show for another network. And so they wouldn't see me on it. And I kind of didn't think about it. I knew it existed and somebody had sent me this script. And, but the WB then wouldn't let me come in because I was on another show. And that's, you know, just as in dating, the best thing is when you're truly not available, because then people are like, no, but you've got to, please go
I'm
to Little
a lot
Dom's
of good
with
tips.
Me. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it can't be like a game you're playing because people can tell, I feel like. But the truth was I was in New York. I was on this other show. So they went through their entire process of seeing everybody that they wanted to see and called me back, you know, weeks later, and it was on, I believe, a Friday, and it was my birthday, and they brought in me and somebody else, and so I, all in one day, sat down with Amy and had a little, like, work session beforehand, and I will never forget that she said to me, because I had gotten almost every job before that, by, like I said, kind of zhuzhing it a little, giving it a little spin, sure, giving it a little improv-y. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, can you just say every word as written? And I was like, I guess. I mean, if you really want to, little did I know that would be my future, you know, literally every word as written. But when years later, I wrote a pilot for the now CW, and I thought the fun way to pitch it rather than pitch it would be, because basically the teaser was all this young girl talking, and I thought I'll bring Mae Whitman in to play the girl, and you know, that way they'll get a better taste of like what the show is, and she can do her own voiceover. And we were sitting in a room, and you know, we improvised quite a bit on Parenthood, and that was our kind of, you know, great script, and then you were free to sort of go off of it a little bit. So we'd, you know, done mainly that. And right before we went in, I was like, Mae, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I'm saying this, but can you do every word as written?
It was contagious.
It was contagious. As a writer, as an actor, I was like, poo poo, I'll make it up. But as a writer, I was like, I actually really need you to do this.
Sure. Well, especially for your first pilot, where the words are so precious.
But also, I think it depends on the piece. It really does. There are some, you know, that don't need to be word perfect. And there are some whose music is messed up if you go away from the words and sort of the syntax. But so I had this work session with Amy, and then I just really auditioned once and walked out of the room, and the phone started ringing in the car on the way home, and flew to Toronto maybe a day or two later. I mean, it was really fast. Mm-hmm. They were really down to the end, and met Alexis in the lobby of the hotel in Toronto. So that's not a normal, that's normally you'd stand next to each other and have a chemistry read or whatever.
Not a lobby liaison in the middle of the night.
No.
Hey, I guess we're mother and daughter for the next 20 years.
Yes.
Cool,
exactly.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
So listen, we got a responsibility on this show.
Because we consider ourselves very important journalists.
We're members of the press now, and there's not a more important time.
Watch your glasses. They're getting...
body slammed
three times into this building alone.
Oh my God.
So we're going to do a lightning round of questions you have gotten before.
Surely.
I mean, doesn't matter. I haven't gotten them here.
You haven't gotten them here. We have a responsibility to our audience to give them to you. What we're going to do, we only need like 2 or 3 word answers.
Okay.
Boom, boom, boom. And then once that's out of the way, we can just hang out and chill.
Okay, fine.
And it's going to be that kind of interview.
Okay.
Okay, so let's start it. Team Dean, Jess, or Logan?
Can't say.
Ooh, was it hard to memorize all those scripts?
Not in most cases, but there were some that would give me trouble, and that's more than 2 words, sorry.
How did you learn to talk so fast?
Honestly, it is the music of the way Amy writes. It just demands it, and you just play along.
Love it. How does it feel to come back to the show after all this time?
It was extremely emotional. It was completely joyous. I felt that I was in a different place to be able to appreciate and really understand the rare moment we were in, and I loved every minute of it.
Who are you closest with?
I mean, close with Alexis, but maybe Kelly is my... my mom passed away about 10 years ago, and Kelly really always, even before that, was like a mother figure to me. So she's really special to me.
Oh, how did you and Scott develop such great chemistry?
I just think we're really different people, and and almost that difference gives us like this weird friction that like just works. I don't understand it, but I appreciate it.
Like magnets. What's the difference between working on Parenthood and Gilmore Girls?
Parenthood, we'd be done by 3 in the afternoon and, you know, shot with a bunch of cameras. It had a very casual kind of family feel, which was appropriate to that show. And Gilmore is much more technical and takes a little more prep.
Parenthood, when's it coming back?
Obviously, the reboot coming to you in 2020.
Gilmore Girls, when's it coming back?
I don't know, and I don't think the world knows right now. I feel like in the way we kind of, it fell together at the right time in the right place, you know, if it's meant to happen again, it'll happen again.
Who's your favorite townie and why?
you know, Babette is just like, I have a soft spot. She's Lorelai's neighbor. I just love the Sally Struthers delivery of that character. It's so like, what? It doesn't make any sense. And I love how she does a lot of like, when she punctuates something, she kind of twists her hand and there's like a thumb thing. I love everything about it. I can't get enough.
And then finally, how did you feel about the final four words?
They were a surprise to me. I had not been told them until we were in the middle of shooting the reboot. And I like, perhaps some of you, kind of my first reaction was like, what? And then I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh. And then I was like, all right. Those were my four stages of slow acceptance.
And the lightning round is complete.
Wow.
Yes, thank you so much.
I did not stick to the rules of 2 to 3
oh,
words.
You good.
It's fine.
I know you had a very pointed answer about your mother and Kelly Bishop in the middle.
No,
that was so good.
Well, because I, you know, of course, again, I'm close to Alexis, and I know that is the primary relationship. So for so many people, and for me too, it's just, there is like an element to the thing with Kelly that's like very personal.
Yeah, well, and I feel like it's probably changed too since even the time that you guys first did the show, and that people, and we've experienced this like talking to different people who were involved in making the show, that people project narratives, right?
Yeah.
Like when people talk to you about the show, it's probably like, it's like me and my mom,
yes,
or it's like me and this guy that I did, or this girl that I did, and blah, blah, blah. And so there is this sort of like, and especially with the transparency of social media, there feels like maybe this weight or responsibility to like, so you're like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you guys are all hanging out and going to after parties, right, and blah, 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 right?
Right?
And it seems like Gilmore was much more like the standard, in a good way,
yeah,
old Hollywood.
Yeah.
You show up, you do the job, you go home.
Well, and also, yes, and also when, you know, we shot on film and we had one or maybe two cameras because you can only light film in a certain way. You can't, you know, digital innovation has created a world where you can light up the whole room and not be so, I don't think people look quite as good, but you can't, you don't have to be so pointed and sort of precious about lighting it. So those days were 14, 16, 18, 20 hours for 7 years, you know, for 8, 9 months a year. So it was just a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the parenthood thing, you know, because we were not at work for so long, and many of us were neighbors, and Peter and I,
like literally neighbors.
Literally neighbors.
Wow.
Many of us live in the same part of town. And, you know, Peter and I had known each other for years and then started seeing one another. I mean, there was just such a crazy degree of familiness, you know, on that show. But yeah, I'm also sensitive to. Yeah, the way the world has changed. And Alexis in particular is like a very private person.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Which is almost like a right that people don't assume anymore, right?
That's right. Not to go deep here, but we can go back to lightning round or singing or whatever.
No, we're here
for
it.
We have four more songs before this is over.
Listen, comedy needs more singing.
I personally feel very conflicted about the way in which things have changed. Just today, I walked out of an interview and a guy had a thing, like some of my books to sign, which is always nice because, you know, usually it's photos or whatever. And I thought for a minute, oh, he maybe is like a genuine, you know, fan who was waiting outside or something, which is so dumb because of course he's not. He is, you know, one of the people we get here who's got stuff signed to sell it. And the point is wearing Snapchat glasses.
Okay.
So the privacy issue is so deep now, you know, where it's not like, can you take a picture? It's I'm literally videoing
you. Sure,
they
believe your life is public domain.
And I'm still so surprised by that and freaked out by it. So I don't know.
Well, you had the luxury of being on this show.
Pagers.
And doing the luxury of pagers and fax machines.
Yes.
And dial-up. No, but to have this tremendous amount of success before you had to live tweet your shows.
That's right.
Contractually.
That's right.
Right? Like you were like, there was almost a cutoff. And after like, if you do a show, you know, and post Shonda like 2012, all right, but you also have to tweet,
yeah,
you know, and you tweet now, but mostly you pretty much opt out of social media
stuff. I'm only on that, and I would not live tweet a show. I really am against that. I want you to watch and enjoy it. And, you know, so I have some old-timey ideas about how people should enjoy things. But, yeah, it's a... things have really changed, and I'm particularly sensitive to... because almost because I have played these characters who are like, hey guys, we're all friends, you know, like I do try to maintain a separate, you know, work and private life, and it's harder and harder.
Yeah. And I assume, especially, well, no, I guess there is a balance, but I was just thinking like the difference between, because there's almost a thing in podcast culture and like in doing a long form interview where it's like 60 minutes, it's not just like telling a funny anecdote to Conan and then like a string dance or whatever, or singing a song with Jimmy Fallon, where it's like the currency of what you have to offer. Is it going to be intimacy? Is it going to be like talking the craft? It's changed so much in what people expect.
Right. And that's difficult too. I would much rather sit here with you guys and analyze something in a deeper way, you know, because my experience doing all that stuff, everything now is a game. Every show you go on is like, okay, we're going to do this hilarious thing. And there just isn't, there aren't that many hilarious games. There just don't exist.
There's like three. And then, some of them ran out.
Some of them with like, you know, in relation to parenthood, it always had to do with like crying and tissues. And then, you know, with Gilmore Girls, it's like, how many cups of coffee can you? And I was like, like, you know, because the show means so much to me that, and I do even feel, especially because the show has girls in the title and it's about, you know, about these women, that we even further get like adorable pillow fight photo shoot or whatever, you know, or like stuff. Alexis and I had a thing where, you know, we would endlessly be asked to pillow fight, and then
endlessly
literally, like, we'd, you know, and like do like cute things. So yeah.
Well, and that is a thing that we found in reexamining the show in this like fun way that is coming from a place of like love and respect, but also just examining the broader culture surrounding it. And one of our favorite segments is just watching the promos that the WB would do for the show.
That would be so
Which is just wild. Not the show.
Wow.
It's like, it's almost like a lie by comparison.
Yeah.
So it's one of those interesting things where the marketing of it was so... in some ways, it obviously it was successful because the show was successful, but it was almost at odds too, because then, you know, for like whether it was males or a certain kind of girl, they didn't feel like, oh, this show's not for me.
Right.
It's Gilmore Girls, there's pillow fights, and carpool and karaoke, and coffee, and tears.
But I've always felt that, and you know, it's funny because you never, I'm so grateful for how to have gotten to do it at all, then that it was successful, then that people wanted it back. You know, all those things are so rare and so great. But there is still a thing, maybe because of how it was portrayed, or it was on this sort of teen network and it says girls in the title. You know, we all these years still get, God, I didn't think that show would be for me, but I really, it's really, hey, that show's really smart or good, or, you know, my boyfriend watches it. Like, all that surprise. And even in the early days of when we were doing it for Netflix and they were selling it overseas and stuff, there was still kind of a like, hey, you guys are really popular. Like, it was still kind of like a, we can't believe how, you know, and I really think to some degree that is, has to do with underestimating, girl power, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, or that something that is of interest to young women could also have a broad appeal. It's why the movie didn't get made
originally.
You know, Amy tried to sell it as a feature film, even in the days of, you know, the Sex and the City films, and the kind of response was, it's just not a big enough audience. You know, we can't, people won't go.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, let's talk about your social battery. What is it right now? Is it drained? Is it bursting with energy? Why is it at the level it's at? There's all these external factors that can make it the way it is. Maybe you're less social during certain seasons. Maybe you're experiencing a lack of boundaries with certain people that's making it more drained than it needs to be. Well, either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been in therapy for 11 years now, and it has been vital and crucial for figuring out how to not overexert myself socially, to keep my battery at a good charge, to not keep it too drained when I'm dealing with all the people that I actually want to be dealing with, and not dealing with people in the way that I don't want to be, which is, of course, due to a lack of good boundaries or how to cope with people. And you learn how to do those things with therapy, because therapy gives you the tools to tune in to yourself and understand, oh, I need this. I don't need this. I need to communicate this. I need to say this. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Do you think that the public image of Gilmore Girls and shows like that has sort of affected the roles you wanted to take past that? Or has it just been like...
Do you mean, do I feel responsibility to that
right.
kind of good person character? Or
in the sense of, do you feel like...
Destigmatizing female roles, essentially?
Right, essentially. Do you feel a responsibility to be like, oh, I don't want to do a role where people are going to think of it as like, oh, it's just for women, or it's only for...
No. It's, of course, in show business, there's way less choice than anyone thinks.
Right.
And basically, you tend to get offered what you've already done. And it was interesting, even in this pilot, casting this pilot, actors I would really like, and somebody would say oh, but the network has never seen them do this before. And I was like, right, that's why it would be so cool to see them do this, and look, here's an audition tape. But there is a real hesitancy to there's so many actors you can get. Why not get the person who you have seen
right.
do that?
They don't want to take risks.
Yeah. And so mainly that hasn't come up. I haven't I get offered a cool single mom wearing a jean jacket. You know what I mean? It's just the same. And that's great. And what has changed for me is, and especially because of even the small slice of social media and that stuff that I see, and kind of where the world is now, I do have a sense of wanting to put, something positive out there. And I do have a sense of pride in that people found it a happy place to visit, or that moms and daughters in particular, or whomever, found it, inspiring, or girls applied to Yale, or, the stuff I've heard over the years. I feel responsible to that, I guess, sometimes, not that. And again, it's just funny. I don't get offered a lot of serial killers, so it hasn't
Not
come up.
Yet.
I have a script.
We have scripts for you if you can read them.
But I do. I'm in these episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and that is definitely. The teen fans should not watch that. if you're a fan of the clean talking Lorelai Gilmore,
I think we scared all the teen listeners away from this podcast. Okay. By now, I think we did our live show last week. But it is funny because you do hear actors say, "Oh, the fun thing. It's not fun to play Superman. It's fun to play the Joker or whatever.
Right,
like kind of the more villainous." But one of the things that's so fun to really examine is that Lorelai, as a character, was like the net positive of it as a whole. It's like a role model, responsible to family, responsible to her kid, and her center is stability. But at the same time, complicated, messed up, broken in some ways. And so within that character, there's still, and certainly for Braverman too, there's still like a broad range of nuance that those sort of roles allow.
Well, also Lorelai's irresponsible and sort of, you know, takes things too lightly. And, you know, it was, though, in coming back to playing her, I thought, God, the thing that used to really just like keep me going, you know, in those long hours and those years and whatever, was there's such a looking on the bright side to that character that changes me physically. You know, sure. Like I'm like always like, hey guys, for listeners at home, my posture is really good right now.
Excellent.
Where, you know, with Sarah, I would say to my showrunner, I'd be like, but why doesn't she succeed more? And he'd be like, you know, she's just one of those people who just like doesn't. And I it was very difficult for me to wrap my mind around that because I had essentially played and identified with someone who viewed herself as a winner, you know, who didn't view herself as a victim or who didn't, you know, need anything else from anyone. And so that was just a funny thing I noticed in going back.
Having to recalibrate.
Yeah. But just feeling that joy, you know, that was like, there's nothing, you know, I loved Sarah too, but it was just one of the many things that was fun to return to.
Yeah, it feels like you've conquered the cool mom category.
I am going to work so hard to not do it again.
Well, it sounds like on Curb, you probably, without spoilers, you probably sidestepped that a little bit.
I did sidestep it for sure. And, you know, what's tough is, even in this Linda from HR thing, I liked that she was married and she's a career woman and she's at a crossroads and just kind of wanting something new and different. And I think we can all identify with, you know, it's a midlife crisis of a kind. And I thought, okay, well, that's completely different. You know, I'm not looking to date anybody, you know, I'm not like going out with Jason Ritter, sadly, because who wouldn't want to do that? But
or Jason Mantzoukas,
or any of the Jasons. But yeah, so I'd really like to. I've said this before, but I'm sort of interested in, and maybe no one else is interested, or maybe it's already Veep. But I'm sort of like, what is our Murphy Brown? Like, what's our kind of funny, you know, where are women today? Show. Right.
You're a Veep fan.
I'm a giant Veep fan.
Same.
Yes.
I think that's the show that proved how funny, like, and how poetic, profane language could be.
Well, she can pull something off. I've always been fascinated by her, but who else can you imagine in that part? That's, like, literally no one.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, the, you know, I get an almost like a depression because I'm like, it's so good. I couldn't, you know... I just, and all those characters, that's the other thing, is that entire world, I'm obsessed with each and every one of them and their kind of subtle genius. So I don't know. So we can't do Veep.
I mean, you can
appear on Veep.
The thing is, people, you're saying that about JLD, the notorious JLD, but people would say that about you.
Wow.
For sure. I mean, we've said that about you dozens of times on the show.
That's
in terms
so
of like
nice.
A Lorelai Gilmore role.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Like that has become iconography. It's not just like, oh, they got that lady to do it. It's like, no, this is the person for this role for this time.
Well, thank you. And that's how it felt to me, you know, when I read it, and that's how it felt to me to come back. And the only downside, you know, like if you have a great love, is they don't grow on trees. It's just really hard. That was a time, a network, a writer, you know, all these things kind of came together in this way that I'm, you know, Amy said this when we were at the Texas, the festival in Austin, and this is before, I don't believe this. She has many, many shows in her and she's doing one right now, but I think that with some distance and perspective there, we all kind of, or at least she and I had a sense of like, sometimes you just get one and isn't that incredible? Like, mm-hmm. Isn't that the luckiest, you know, maybe you started out thinking like, I'll have three or four super special characters. And then you go, oh no, of course you won't. And the fact that you got one, I know, you know, some actors are like, I need to get away from this, you know, this character that identified me. I feel thrilled that I got, you know, yes, I would like to try to stretch myself, but I feel thrilled that I got to have one. It's an incredible experience.
Sure. Right. But it must be, it is a sort of like... complicated relationship to have, because it is the thing that forever, not casts a shadow, but it's just always in the picture. And whatever, you know, when the book is written, it'll be Lauren Graham, Lorelai Gilmore, Sarah Braverman, etc. Caroline in the City.
thank you.
Seinfeld.
Townies. Yeah. I think that's okay, you know, and also my whole feeling about, I think it happened at the exact right time as you were saying, you know, show business is in a different place now. I'm in a different age. I have been able to branch out as a writer to some degree, and so who knows, but maybe that was enough, you know. I mean I don't want to be done with acting, but
yeah, because
I'm also not like as obsessed with it as I used to be.
Sure. Right. Well, especially when you're young, it seems like the only thing that exists.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And now it can be something that can be a source of contentment or joy, but in a way that doesn't like crowd out the other, maybe more important things in your life too.
Well, I definitely, when I was doing this show, had no sense of balance at all. I just was into being an actor and this part and this, you know, and what else, and feeling ambitious. And I just don't feel like that anymore. It's exactly what you're saying. It's, but there's a loss in that too, because it was fun to be obsessed with it. You know what I mean? It was fun to be kind of driven. And now it's, I don't know. I just value my home life. I value, you know, and I did then too, but I guess it's, there's a, somebody just slipping a note under the door. So old school. She couldn't text you that?
Well, that's the script for the serial killer.
Oh, yeah. You're just getting started, I guess.
Yeah,
it's very flat.
Joan Wayne Gacy.
Wayne Gacy?
That's right.
That's solid.
Thank you.
That's solid. Yeah.
So have you found yourself like branching out to other areas of like the Hollywood wheel, like where it's like you're acting, but you also want to write, or you want to direct or produce?
Yeah. I mean, all those things. I'm working on a couple scripts right now. I adapted a book called The Royal We into a movie. I don't know if it will get made. I'm just in the process of getting the rights to a book called Windfall, which my editor on my two books is a YA author, and this is her book. And it was this very odd moment where she's worked as my editor, and I'm a fan of her work, but I was sort of like, I wonder if I asked her if I could adapt her book, would she be like, oh, that's cute. Yeah, you're a nightmare to work with, or whatever. Like, I just wondered what she would feel about it. And she, you know, and she was like, I was really hoping that would happen. And oh my God, this is exactly what I want. And so it was like this really wonderful thing. So I have that. I owe the publishers Random House another novel that I was half in the middle of before the book of essays needed to take precedence. So there
is it called Today, Definitely?
That title, I would not call my sweet, sweet book that I love so much. I wouldn't call it that today. It was originally called Faster, Funnier, Louder, which, as you may know, or is a sort of theater expression of like, and there was a fear that that was too like inside show business. And
I think you get it either way.
Yeah. I just thought that seemed like a more fun title. But anyway, it's not a sequel really to that book. It's kind of, there's a character or two from the book that you'll see again.
Okay.
It was originally supposed to be a sequel, but now that was like 4 years ago. And like, yeah.
Just be part of the Lauren Graham novels extended universe.
Yes.
Like a Marvel
yes.
movie where they yeah. cross over. And
but there is sort of a crossover. So I have a lot of work to do, but writing takes much longer than being an actor. And so, but there is something, you know, when I wake up and I don't have an acting job, there's definitely 2 to 7 things I need to be working on. So that's really the main thing to me is just having something creative I can do, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, directing, you got to sit in the editing room. You got to get up so early.
It's a
I'm
lot,
not sure.
Man.
Yeah. It's a lot, man. Yeah. I want the fun part of just like working with actors on scenes and, you know, you got to go location scout. You know, I'm talking myself out of a directing job.
Yeah,
I would
think
actually
you're resigning
love to.
From a job.
No, it's just like, what's funny is I would love to direct. I have, already been a producer, which sometimes means something and sometimes just doesn't. But I think what I'm talking about is you get to a point where you know all the pieces and how they work. And so then what material you're working on becomes even more important because there's no mystery of what the process is, you know. Right. I'm interested in all of it. You know, this all started because I was like a Rory level reader as a kid. I was just, that was all I did. That was what I did for fun. That was what I did. You know, my dad would take me to the bookstore and he'd say like, you can get whatever you want. And that was like, I couldn't believe it. You know, little did I know at the time that he was giving me something that was good for me. I thought I was like getting away with retail murder. You know, I was like anything I want. I mean, it wasn't, but I could get like a stack of books and it just exposed me to so many different stories. And so being an actor just sort of felt like the next step. Yeah. So now that I'm a writer, it's just almost like going full circle back to that.
It sounds like you're definitely chasing something different now than what you were before.
I guess I'm not sure. I'm trying to stay open to whatever is coming because I can't imagine what it is. And but I think it's, you know, like I keep saying this today, but like if Downton Abbey was still on, I would be campaigning hard. Like, like in terms of something different, I feel like
period stuff.
Yeah, something that, you know, where it's not just contemporary. Like kids, mom's got to get going now, okay? You know, or whatever.
So it's there's like, a bat, but with a British accent.
Exactly, it's the same.
Mama,
mummy has to jump to the trolley.
Yeah, so a period piece has an anti-hero starring.
It's going. It's doing theater. You know, whatever it is. It's so annoying when actors are like, I'm just really looking to stretch myself, but you know, I think it's been easy. Like something just came up where I was like a single mom with a thing and I was like, I actually can't do it. Like I really can't.
Yeah. And you must have gone through that at the beginning of parenthood too, which was
Parenthood, even though she was a single mom, to me it was so different. And then after a while I was like, oh, it's kind of similar. but you know, it felt like that also, you know, you make these decisions for all different reasons. I thought, like, here's Brian Grazer and Ron Howard and, you know, this great piece of material and some people I know. And because that becomes more important, too, you know, is like, what day are you going to have? And, you know,
I remember when the pilot reshot.
Yeah.
I just happened to be interning for Tommy.
Oh.
And so I visited set for a couple of days.
Oh, wow.
I remember it was like, it was an interesting vibe. It felt more like camp than a war zone.
Got even more so. Yeah. It just got looser and looser until I felt bad for directors because it was literally like being a camp counselor to like sixth graders.
Oh,
people
sure.
would be like, rah, 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 like around the dining table. And they'd be like, guys. Okay. Yeah. Guys, guys, like we just couldn't shut up.
And there's more of that as the show went on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like as we wrap this up and this is the last episode of the podcast.
I can't believe it because you're doing,
we did Bunheads.
You did Bunheads. Yes. And now you're going to be like Maisel Men or something.
We did one episode called Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Men.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just feels, and it's one of these things, we started it and it was just a lark and we were just like, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun way to spend some time. Of course, growing up loving it and him watching it for the first time and the whole conceit of the show. And we started that September 2014, almost 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
And here we are 237 episodes later. And it was supposed to like, oh yeah, we'll do the 153, we'll be done.
Right.
And then the revival happened.
Right.
And then the reunion, awesome. And then this, and then that. And so this feels like the most perfect possible conclusion to the show that we could have asked for. And having you on, and I feel like for a lot of people, Gilmore Girls has been a show that, like we were talking about before, were super reflective. People identified with it, saw themselves in it, or like, I wish my mom and you know, was like that, or my mom is like that, or whatever the case may be. And because of that, people felt such strong ties and relationship, identification with you, and your character, and your performance. And I feel like in doing the show, Demi and I got to see a little bit of that because it changed your life doing the show. I feel like doing the podcast kind of changed our lives too in a big way because it was never supposed to be this.
Right.
You know what I mean? What it's become and doing shows and you guys being so gracious enough to give us a little cameo and being so lovely after all this time.
But I have to tell you guys that it means so much in this, especially in the world we're in of, like, you know, people being critical of things, that to just come to appreciate something as fans and as, you know, you educating a friend about it. And, like, there's something so loving and beautiful about that. And so one way or another, I was definitely going to be here, but I just always appreciated just the sheer kind of love and positivity and, you know, just like doing this for fun, and that, because I really believe in that, you know, you do something because it's just your genuine interest and love, and you're obviously also good at it. And then look at, it leads you down all these paths. It's what I love about this show, and you kind of took it and gave it a whole other branch, you know, a way for people to enjoy and check in. And so thank you so much. I just really appreciate it.
And we wanted to say thank you for your performance.
Thank you so much.
This is a performance that is going to live on. It's one of those things. I've used the word iconic like 5 or 6 times.
It's iconic, but it won't be your only icon. I'm sure.
It's okay.
On the thing. So, and yeah, and I think we're speaking for a lot of people when we say that. Like, it seems like you're just showing up, you're just doing your job, you're doing the best thing you possibly can. Mm-hmm. But it means something, and mm-hmm. it matters. And I think this is the best possible situation for the stuff that, like, you do. I almost compared us to you. We're not like that.
No, you are.
Like, we do. Guys
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But in the sense that you do it, it turns out to be something good and beautiful to an mm-hmm. audience, big or small, and that it makes a positive impact in mm-hmm. people's lives. I think it's so beautiful. Sorry, my voice is getting a little
But me too, because it was a gift for me to. I didn't think about it in this way. In the way that I think about it now, when I got that job, I thought, like, oh, here's fun. And it's, you know, it's sort of, it went from being kind of like, how can I do a good job so that my career, you know, it went from being something kind of about me to having, I feel like it has nothing to do with me anymore. It's just, I'm so proud to have been part of something that is meaningful to people. And that's now what means the most to me about it, you know, and that was a gift for me. And I said this to Amy, you know, near the end, that in that, you know, speech she gave me at the end of the show about Ed and the pretzel, and then he gives me a pretzel. It's like she saw me, you know, in the way that she wrote about him seeing his daughter, you know, she saw me like that and handed me this show that was like the best pretzel I could ever have.
Wow. It's a damn good pretzel, I gotta say.
Fucking really good pretzel. and without, in that little tiny gesture, she changed my whole life, you know. And that's, it's just, I will never stop being thankful and amazed that you know that got to happen.
Yeah,
everyone here is crying.
I know. I can't really believe it, deep. Guys. It's getting dusty up in here.
It's very embarrassing for everyone at home that can see us.
And we cried so much at the end of fall already. Lauren, thanks again.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for making the time. We end the show. We ask people where they can find you on social media and stuff, and something they're enjoying in pop culture at the time. Last time we asked you about that, it was American Idol, which is now coming back, like Gilmore Girls.
What I'm enjoying in pop culture right now?
Yeah, anything. I guess Veep. I guess that's
Veep for sure. I keep getting asked about Handmaid's Tale, and I've seen a little of it, and I'm banking the rest of them for when I can handle it.
It's a lot to swallow.
It's just a lot right now. I just feel, but it's fantastic and wonderful. But I'll say the last thing I finished was Feud. I just felt real connected to I don't know, just these, like, you know, ladies having, you know, being actors, and just I just loved it, those two performances so much. And it was depressing but inspiring, which is what I'm looking for in my entertainment.
Depressing but inspiring. I think that's
the
Lorelai
Gilmore
last
story.
Note to go out
exactly
on this podcast. Now, traditionally, we in Gilmore Guys a certain way. We play the theme song, we sing along to it.
That's right.
We're going to do that now. It's the last episode. We can't not. If you feel like singing along,
obviously I'm going to sing.
Feel
along.
Free.
Obviously.
What if not?
Terrific. I don't know. Yeah, only, but, I don't know what key we're going
to
be
but
in.
Again, but again, we don't want to be like dance monkey. Welcome to the game. Okay. Tears,
maybe I'll just like
fights.
Harmonize. Let's see. Let's Woo. Do it.
We can. Okay.
All right. Beautiful harmony.
Here we go, guys. It's probably better than mine. I wasn't ever in Guys and Dolls. Okay, here we go. You're out on the road. Oh, yeah.
Feeling lonely and so cold. All you have to do is call my name and I'll be there on the next train where you lead. I will follow anywhere that you tell me to. If you need me to be with you, I will follow.
Oh, oh, oh!
Sorry,
where
for
you lean, I will follow anywhere that you tell me to. If you need me to be with you, I will follow where you lead.
I like that song.
I love that song.
It's a great song.
I love Carol too.
Thanks everybody.
Thanks you guys.
For
love
listening.
You. Bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Ugh. Yay.
Wow.